Good evening, everybody. How are we doing? It's been way too long. Good to see all of you. Good to see you three guys. And then, you know, virtually everybody else as we pile up the numbers in the chat room. Great to be with you. Sean Pendergast, Landry Locker, Reggie Attula, Cody Stutes. We are the Texans Collective here on a, what I guess we'll call a coming out of the bye week edition. And this will be the kind of one of the rare ones where we're probably doing a whole lot more preview than we do in other episodes, because we got what could wind up being one of the biggest games, well, undoubtedly one of the biggest games of the year so far for the Texans. And I think when we look back, this might end up, who knows, the way the schedule and the way the NFL is this year, we might look back and this might be the toughest opponent, the toughest situation they've been in on the road in Seattle. So we're here to break it all down for you. As I mentioned, I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. To my right is Landry Locker of The Locker Room with Landry Locker and SNL as well. Reggie Attula, right below him. He, of course, hosts middays on Sports Radio 610 on In the Loop, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then right beneath me on the screen right here is Cody Stutes, Houston Football with Cody Stutes and SNL. We are the Texans Collective. And it's great to be with you tonight. Before we get into it, be sure right now while you're thinking about it, give us a like, give us a subscribe. And we're here typically on Mondays, but because of the bye week and travel schedules and everything, and plus I think this just fits better this week, doing it on a Wednesday. It's really, really good to be back here on the stream and ready to go. So let's get to it. Let's get to Seattle off of a weekend of NFL football where, guys, we went into the weekend. A lot of us went into the weekend saying, well, we know the Detroit Lions are good. And I know the Bills lost to the Patriots, but I still think the oddsmakers still think they're the best team in the AFC. So we know that. But, boy, we sure don't know a lot about this other stuff going on here in the NFL. And lo and behold, in prime time on the road, both the Lions and the Bills both lose by double digits to the Chiefs and the Falcons. And so now the power rankings have been all reshuffled. I don't know how you guys feel, but the chaos, when you're 2-3 and you're trending in the right direction and you got a nice big matchup where you can get a whole lot of people back on the bandwagon with a win, the chaos feels really beneficial for the Texans right now to me.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and that's why I think this is such a pivotal game, because if you can start the season losing three and then you win the next three, and you look at the AFC, there's seven teams with winning records. Five of those teams have two losses. Obviously, the Texans are a little bit ahead, are behind when it comes to total games, but you would be one loss ahead of five of the seven teams that have a winning record. Oh, by the way, you also play the Colts twice, who are at the tippity top. You still got the Bills at home. They look somewhat beatable. You got Denver not too far away. So it is shaping up very nicely, and it's very opportunistic. And just to even add to that, I think the fact that you're going to have to win games like this to prove that you are a playoff caliber team, and this is like kind of that ultimate test, I think it just kind of shapes up nicely for the Texans when it comes to this game and the opportunity that they have in front of them.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a great point. On top of that, I think just generally the chaos is nice. It's comforting because in a way it gives you a even better reason to focus on yourself. As D'Amico Ryans kind of says, like, hey, the teams that don't start looking at the standings, because, you know, the teams that look like towers can be rubble as soon as you look up, you know. And so on top of that, like, you go out, you have a level of confidence or maybe even delusion. We've seen this with athletes in all sorts of different places, right? Where you go, I don't care how good that team is, because I've seen all of the teams, like literally any team that you go, I think this team is good, has shown their ass in some way, shape, or form. So, and you can also convince yourself that we are a good team. We just happen to show our ass early, right? So I think that all of those things can give you a level of boost. You can use this as fuel headed into what looks like the most difficult game of the season to this point, and could possibly end up being the most difficult game of the season all the way around.
Yeah, the three-game start that the Texans had, you're going to need somebody else to help you out, in addition to the fact that you lowered your margin for error. So the Texans, the margin for error is smaller because of their slow start, and you probably need other teams over the course of other teams' schedules to help you out. You're going to need somebody to knock the Colts around and give you an opportunity to catch them. You're going to need some people to knock the Jaguars around, give you an opportunity to catch them, and you should get that over the course of the season, because it doesn't feel like anybody is just some sort of world beater, and that's nice, but none of that matters if the Texans don't take care of their business and actually prove that they got right and are headed in the right direction after those two games against inferior opponents.
And it's actually laid out pretty nicely, too, because you have a situation where it's weakness on strength, which I think is is interesting, and it's shaped up to where if Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans truly use their assets appropriately, then your extreme strength should be able to overcome your extreme weakness. They've invested a hell of a lot on this defensive line, and if the defensive line can take advantage of the big strength that they have against Seattle's offensive line, then that puts you in good shape. You got to overcome the problems on your offensive line, which are pretty significant, but I think it actually kind of shapes up for the Texans to where you can kind of validate where most of the money has gone.
Yeah, but honestly, I think the beauty of a game like this, and maybe this is that's a sick way of using beauty, is that all those things are there, and we can talk about that. There is plenty within the lines of this game that they could focus on inherently, right? Like there are so much here that you're still working on when it comes to figuring out what you are as a team. Like there's still you have proof of concept. Now you actually have to go and build on that outside of what does this ultimately mean if we can get to 3-3 and can we get to 8, 9, 10, 11 win, whatever. None of that matters right now. You've got to figure out, do I actually have an offense that's competent, not just against teams that are battered and bruised and ready to fire their coach or at least clamoring to fire their coach? Can I do this against a team that is competent? Can I do this against a team that is up and coming? Like that is, I think that is all the interest that you could possibly need, even though there's even more to go around.
Yeah, that when it comes to the offense, yeah, I mean, this could very well be, when we wake up on Tuesday morning, it could very well be like, well, at least they got an extra week to enjoy that offense that they had in the Ravens game. What was the benefit of the bye week? They got to enjoy it for a week, like talking about how good they were getting and whatnot. This is a really, really good defense that's kind of a bad matchup, I think, for the Texans. That's why I think I'm very, very anxious to see what kind of game plan they come out with, because the Texans have, I mean, since D'Amico got here, talked about got to run the football. They might be running into a brick wall with this Seattle defensive line. I'm anxious to see if maybe they pivot and come out, you know, kind of doing what they were doing. The Ravens game, they came out and they were kind of hitting that short passing game and whatnot. So I'm very anxious to see what they do there. But this is one that there's no great solutions. I mean, they're really good at rushing the passer. They're really good at stopping the run. It's a tough environment to play in, I would imagine, especially at nighttime on Monday Night Football. Even though for whatever reason, Mike McDonald somehow is 4-8 at home. That may be the weirdest thing I've seen all year, is he's 4-8 at home, but he's 10-1 on it. Like, he obviously has been coaching a good football team for the 2 years he's been there, but they can't win at what is reputed to be one of the best home field advantages in all of football.
I am fascinated to see, too. This is a matchup unlike the previous two, where not only do the Texans have to take care of their business, you also have to showcase what type of coaching staff you have. Like, if the Texans just handled what the Texans needed to worry about against Tennessee and that depleted Baltimore team, they likely were going to beat both of those teams. Like, schematically and this and that, it mattered a whole lot less in those two wins that they were able to put on the board. It matters a whole lot more from this. So, like, what did you build on as an offense, and what can Nick Caley do to avoid that defensive line? What did you build on as a defense, and what can you do to affect the guy who hasn't made a lot of mistakes this year, who hasn't been sacked upon this year? Like, this game is a whole different stratosphere than the previous games, because not only do you have to do what you're capable of doing, you also have to go and schematically, with your coaching and with the way that you use the players, go affect the other team, which is, that was a less important element of the previous two games that they played. So that's another element where, hey, if you believe in these guys, they're going to show growth in those areas, and they're going to be able to kind of dictate how things go because they were ready for what the other team was bringing to the table.
And one of the beautiful things about that is, yes, it's going to be a challenge for Caley. I think also, though, it's not like you're running up against a brick wall. It is a good defense. I don't know that I'd call it a great defense. Like, the defensive front is really problematic. The middle, really, really good. The edges are really smart, even if they're not, like, incredible. The secondary is at least battered, right? Like, they have a good – if you look at their depth chart, they've got some really good guys in the secondary. I don't know how many of those guys are actually going to be playing in this game. There's places that are there, I guess, on paper to attack. And now we start to get a better feel for, hey, Nick Caley, how does that game plan offense that you've been talking about, like, how well do you do in game planning? Especially because the game plan here is over a couple of weeks. Like, you've had ample time to make this happen. You actually, I think, have kind of an interesting juxtaposition here with this team. So, yeah, I'm very intrigued to see how Nick Caley, as we continue to feel out what we have in the offensive coordinator, how he answers the challenge.
Yeah, and you mentioned the secondary. I think we'll get a good grasp of that as the week goes on. Witherspoon, they thought he might come back last week, and Mike McDonald just kind of said that it was kind of a weird situation. They don't really have anyone that can check Nico Collins. And the other thing, though, to kind of add to it, and this is why this is such a good matchup, there's so many layers. Like, do the Texans have a number two wide receiver that can step up? That's the other problem is do the Texans have another wide receiver that can step up? The stats, like the stat, like ping pong in this game is insane. Seattle is by far number one in the league. I asked D'Amico Ryans about it yesterday in play action passing. They average nearly 15 yards per pass. Texans are first in play action defense. So that's kind of a good counter there. You talk about the run game. Seattle stops the run really well. Well, the Texans haven't really ran the ball well. Will Nick Caley try to fit the square peg into the round hole? There's a lot of back and forth when it comes to the matchup. And then the stunts. And I've brought this up. I've kind of been a little bit obsessed with this. But Seattle's third in the league in running stunts. They do it nearly 40% of the time. We talk about Baltimore. We talk about Tennessee. I would say those are the two games where people started feeling good about this offensive line. Those teams don't stunt very much. Baltimore's dead last, and Tennessee's like 18th. They're like in the 18 to 20 range. So they're going to face some stunts, and it's going to be a really, really big challenge for the offensive line. This is where we're going to kind of figure out what they are about and how it works. But it just seems like wherever you're worried about with the Texans, you're on the other side, you have the exact flip feeling when it comes to how the Texans feel, specifically on the D lines and the offensive line.
And it's worth noting, it's the left side of the offensive line, right? Like, this is where you see, hey, how far along are you in your development process, rookie? Because he's the one that's been getting earhole on these stunts, right? Ariante Ursary, have you picked up a little bit of this? Can Juice Scruggs help you out with this? Or are we going to see a little bit of CJ Stroud rushing to his right to get out of the pocket?
All right, let's get to Jackson Smith and Jigba. We've not talked about JSN yet. My apologies to everybody in the chat room who's talking about the two foam cups that I'm talking into.
It does sound like you're calling in on your cell phone.
Yeah,
it does
sound it's the like same that. Way I've done the show the first five or whatever. So I promise to figure it out for the next show. I'll probably just need to invest in a microphone. So let's get to Jackson Smith and Jigba. We all knew he was really good. Obviously, a first-round pick coming out of Ohio State. I don't know that we saw this coming, where 6 weeks into the season, he's leading the NFL by a wide margin in receiving. excuse me, in receiving yards. What do we think? Is this a Derek Stingley follows him around the field situation on Monday night? What are you guys thinking about this?
It damn sure better be. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. And I think Stingley, if you ask Derek Stingley, and we're going to ask him, that's the most important media session of the week. Cody already put it in their ear, said, hey, we got to talk to Stingley this week. Not really worried about anything else. He wants to do it. Like, he likes to do it. He wants to do it. He should do it. So the answer to that is yes. They should definitely follow him around. The other interesting thing about Smith and Jigba is this, and this was always laughable to me. I'm like a big Smith and Jigba guy. He's from Rockwall, Texas, by the way. Good recruiting, Texas. Anyway, but the thing about him is the biggest knock, and it was kind of funny, was, well, he only lines up in the slot. He's only a slot receiver. He didn't line up outside. Well, they had Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Marvin Harrison there. So, like, what did you want him to do? Did you want them to move those guys away from the outside? And now we're seeing, because early on in his career, it was mainly slot. But now we're seeing with Cooper Kupp, they're lining him up on the outside. They're lining him up on the inside. They're running him in motion. They're doing a lot more. And he's playing better than any receiver in the league right now. So if you pay a corner like Derek Stingley, he wants the challenge. We've seen D'Amico willing to do it. It damn sure better be a Stingley follows Smith and Jigba type of game.
And even I'll take that even further. You talk about all the places that they lined him up. They've actually he's only gotten a quarter of his snaps, I believe, from the slot. Like, he's actually more of an outside receiver now than anything else. So if you have him on the outside, and if he's this damn good, where he's putting up damn near like 150 every game, it better be Derek Stingley on him. Otherwise, what the hell do you have Derek Stingley for?
Well, you have to a few days to figure this out. You know, it's like, hey, we don't typically do that as a defense. Yeah, but you have that ability to do that. Like, you look at who Seattle's played. None of those teams had a number one corner anywhere close to the caliber of Derek Stingley. So you have the ability to figure out how the other 10 guys need to operate in the universe that is Derek Stingley is guarding Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And if Jaxon Smith-Njigba goes out there and he beats one of the best corners in football, okay, it's not your day. You lose. But you shouldn't have a Kamari Lassiter. You shouldn't have a, God forbid, Jalen Petrie end up on Jaxon Smith-Njigba in a matchup and have that destroy this defense that has been one of the best defenses in football through the first month plus of the season. Put 24 on him. Let him follow him around wherever it is, and then just have the other 10 players on defense adjust around that. It's really not even 10 players. It's just have the other DBs adjust around it as necessary, because you're still sending the four defensive linemen, and maybe you got a blitz here and there, but it would make no sense to be like, okay, well, here's Derek Stingley on Torrey Horton, the rookie from Colorado State who didn't even play football last year. Like, that'd be inferior use of your assets on defense. Like, that would not be a good way to use Derek Stingley. Let him follow him around. It's not something you do every week. He's had the time to get healthy off the bye week. Let him go out there and challenge JSN every snap that he's on the field.
It's interesting too, just, you know, the lesson in drafting best available, you know, like I, when they drafted him a couple years ago, I'm trying to remember if receiver was a huge need. They had DK Metcalf on the team and Tyler Lockett, granted an aging Tyler Lockett, but they, like, receiver was not a weakness for the Seattle Seahawks that I recall when they drafted Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And it is a lesson, man. Like, yeah, they drafted him. And now you understanding that the NFL, things change on rosters really fast. You know, especially nowadays that it's much more of a trade league, the trades happen. And it's a good thing they did it, man. It's a good thing they did it. They've got one of the top, for this season, one of the top five wide receivers in football because of that decision.
Yeah, and my whole thing, and this is just me personally, but I like the combination, the possibility of Stroud and JSN at 2-12. So the other thing that I brought up earlier today on SNL with Stutes was, for me personally, this is going to be like a damn, they traded JSN and the 33rd overall pick for Will Anderson. Like, it would be nice for Will Anderson to be the best player on the field in this game. Like, that's kind of how I'm looking at this, because I kind of had the vision of JSN being perhaps a Texan. Now, I wanted Bryce Young too, but that's like a different thing. But at quarterback and wide receiver, but that's kind of how I'm looking at this. Will Anderson, it would be nice, and I'm really kind of tired of it. I don't know about you guys. I'm not trying. Again, this is kind of grounding your honor student for getting a B plus or an A minus. But I'm sick and tired of Will Anderson eats one game and then Danielle Hunter eats the other. Both, there's plenty of food out there. Like, go out there and both you guys. I don't want to have to look at the advanced stats the next morning to know that one of you played really, really good and one of you, my wife could have told if you played a good game or not. Like, is it too much to ask for the best edge duo in the league, a guy that you gave a haul to acquire in Will Anderson, and a guy that you've paid the way that you've paid Danielle Hunter? Is it too much to ask for these guys to go out there and eat at the same time? It almost feels like a first date with these guys where one of the people's afraid to eat in front of the other. Go out there and stuff your damn faces.
Is this the old DeMarcus Lawrence? Is that what we're doing here? Where it's like, oh, he's got Micah Parsons on the other side and DeMarcus Lawrence. Just look at the stats, man. It's in there. He's doing great. Pressure is up there.
Yeah, pressure.
85% pressure win rate. This feels like a shot at me. It's some way, shape, or form, because I do love.
Oh, do we need advanced, to clear out? I got you.
I do love an advanced stat. I do love a pass rush win rate or a quarterback pressure percentage or a sack percentage, if you will, for next gen stats. Look, Will Anderson is not sacking the quarterback at the same rate that he did last year. If he does, he's going to be a defensive player of the year candidate. If he doesn't, he's going to be a really good football player and he's going to be a really good defender. And we're all going to be like, yeah, he's really good, but he's not X, Y, and Z, and then we'll list all the top pass rushers in the league. You would love to see that next thing, and then the biggest thing is he'll tell you there's more out there. That was the whole conversation from Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson in the offseason was they felt like they left not just some, they've said it, they left a lot out there from a defensive line perspective, and they worked on making sure they turned that corner. Hey, you want to make sure Jackson Smith and Jigba doesn't get the football? How about having one of those guys lay on top of Sam Darnold in the backfield because they sacked him, okay? Yeah. Or have Darnold doing that panic thing where he gets that really dumb look on his face and he didn't know what to do with the football, and he gets his eyes all big. And then, you know, like in week one, when he swung his arm and hit his left tackle in the back and fumbled the football, it looked like he, you know, dropped his drink in a party. Like, that's what those guys are there. Like, as much as it's, hey, put Stingley on Jackson Smith and Jigba, it's a wide receiver league. Like, you're still going to be – there's still going to be moments where Jackson Smith and Jigba's going to get open, he's going to get yards. You've got to affect things in addition to, hey, we put our best corner on that guy. And that's where, you know, Landry's conversation about – the Neil and Will comes in.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see, like, how much pressure they're actually able to generate. Well, pressure has clearly not been the issue. It's actually getting home. Sam Darnold's been kind of, like, fine. Like, he hasn't taken very many sacks as well, and he's not incredibly mobile. But it's something that I know you guys talked about when talking to D'Amico is, you know, the idea of this team using two tight ends, this team using fullbacks to make those condensed sets. Like, I think more that's more about dictating to the defense what you want them to do, trying to get them in base, those types of things. But I do wonder if just that more traffic, if that adds or, you know, hurts what Daniil and Will are able to do trying to get back there with all the traffic. Does that create chaos with the Seahawks offensive line, or does that give them a little bit of opportunity to maybe get back there and get somebody who's not nearly as mobile, some of the guys that have gotten away from them early on in the season?
Yeah, they run the most 12. They run the most 12 in the league, and the Texans are really good against 12. So it's kind of, like I said, it goes back to the crazy, like, ping pong stats that are going on here.
See, not all advanced stats are bad, Landry. See,
there we go. Yeah. Bringing them along.
It wasn't a shot at you. It was just more a shot of are they allowed to get sacks in the same game? Like, am I allowed to see? Like, it seems like it's, oh, Will Anderson had two sacks. Well, what was Daniil doing today? Oh, let's log into the computer on. Oh, he played fantastic. Like, how about both? Let's get both. Let's get green. I need to see both these guys go out there and do their thing. That's where
Landry, are you asserting that they're like, you know what? I'm not going to have any sacks today. I think I'm good today. I'm all right. You want to have them?
I just want to be able to see that in this situation, this game, and this is how big of a game this is. I think if the Texans win this, you can say they're a playoff team. You can say this is a playoff team if they win this game. With the way that the table is set, if you're 3-3, you're heading into three straight games at noon, then it just completely flips the season. And when these situations happen, like when big events happen, when you go to expensive dinner, like if I go to expensive dinner with Sean Pendergast, he's picking up the tab. He's the richest guy.
Wait, Sean does that? There's expensive dinners? Why haven't I had an expensive dinner, Sean?
It's coming, Reggie. It's coming.
Okay, cool.
Not hypothetical, but like Daniil Hunter, you paid him. Will Anderson, you paid a lot for him. Nico Collins, that's another one of your followers. Eric Stingley, he's paid. Like, these guys got to pick up the tab on Monday. I need to see it. I need to see all of them out there doing their thing.
Well, for Will too. I mean, if you guys look at the odds board, Will is the closest one out of any of these guys to being at the top of the heap for their respective piece of hardware. You know, CJ's not winning the MVP this year, barring some tear through the last two thirds of the season. I don't think anybody's winning Offensive Player of the Year on this offense. Will Anderson is still a top five or six guy on the odds board. Clearly, those people are reading the advanced stats right now that put that together. My point is, Monday Night Football, national TV, these are always good narrative-creating moments for guys. And Will's got the biggest opportunity there.
And so does Stingley. Like, we're early in the season. Like, that's how a corner gets noticed. Like, Reuben Baldwin was noticed because he was following dudes around and shutting them down. Like, the way that people are talking about JSN right now, if Derek Stingley goes out there and does what Derek Stingley's capable of doing, then maybe he gets into that conversation too, because it's on national TV. It's in Seattle. Like, that's another opportunity for Derek Stingley. I know he relishes those types of opportunities.
Does it give you any solace thinking about the idea that some of the lack of sack production has come when you've had some quarterbacks that have been capable of actually pulling the ball down and get out? Like, I know that D'Amico Ryan's made a point of how, you know, your edge rushers have to be, you know, run sound. And that was something that, you know, they struggled with a little bit early on, at least with what you would expect their normal baseline to be. I feel like they might not have nearly as much of the run sound in their perspective. All right. I mean, still, they're going to need to do that to make sure that you don't have Kenneth Walker out here busting big games, Zach Charbonnet. But those guys have actually not been all that productive
this year. Just Kenneth Walker.
Yeah, fair. I feel like those guys have not been as productive this year running the football, and maybe they're being the defensive edges being able to pin their ears back and just focus a little bit more on getting to the quarterback might increase that sack production.
It'd be nice, you know. And look, if you want to put them in second and long, third and long, I mean, my God, the Texans act like that's the boogeyman. You can never succeed out of it. So put a couple of opposing offenses in situation and see what your guys can do. I would also say this too, as much as they're going to have a plan for Willie Anderson and Danielle Hunter. Like, they do have to go out there and account for them. And you talked about it, Reggie, maybe it's tight ends or this back or helping on that. When that's happening, you need one of those defensive tackles to go in there and go make a play. Like, if you're thinking about where you could exploit some of the Seahawks, it's the interior. You've got an unimpressive center. You got one of the worst guards in football on the right side. And the left side is a rookie who's had, you know, a roller coaster start to his career, just like Ariante Ursary. So Sheldon Rankins, a Tim Settle, when there is a plan for Hunter and Will Anderson, go make a play at defensive tackle and get in there and have one of the big fellas laying on top of Sam Donald.
Yeah. I think, too, to Landry's point about, you know, trying to really get to max pass rush, they've actually had pretty good – the Texans have had pretty good injury luck on the other side. You know, they've played against some banged-up offensive lines this year. So I kind of feel you, Landry, on that one. About, you know, just they need one of those – like, one, I know they lost the game last year, but one of those games like they had against Tennessee where Will Levis is just running for his life the entire time. They haven't had that yet when it comes to just purely getting the quarterback on the ground. So – could use that for sure. All right, before we move on with the program, Cody, we talked about JSN a little bit. We got JSN. We got skill guys on one side. We got skill guys on the other. I know what that means for me. It means Prize Picks.
Yeah, Prize Picks is fantastic for daily fantasy. Use our code TEXANS. You play your first five, you get $50 instantly right there in your account. There's a link in the description down below. You can click it. It should auto-fill that code for you. And if not, that code TEXANS, TEXANS, will get you that play five, and you get $50 to play with. So you just put a few bucks in there. You play your first five, and we're going to put together a Prize Fix entry right here. Each of us is going to get a prize fix. So I've got it sorted for that Monday Night Football matchup for the Texans. Got receiving yards, passing yards, rush yards, touchdowns, passing touchdowns. Who'd like to go first? Where are we starting here?
I'll go first because I already put in a lineup. So I'm going to give you – I've got a combo Notre Dame-Texans lineup. We won't need to put any Notre Dame stuff in here. I know this is not the Notre Dame – it's not the Irish collective. But hopefully there's a future Notre Dame player or future Texan in my lineup named Jeremiah Love. I'm going to go more than 222.5 passing yards for C.J. Stroud. I think the Texans are going to have an awfully tough time running the football. I think they're going to put it in C.J.'s hands a little bit more than we expect them to. And it's also kind of insurance if they get behind in this game. We know they're going to be throwing the football. So I'm going to go more than 222. I got it at 222.5. Whatever it is on the screen there, I'm going to go more than.
All right, so more passing yards for C.J. Stroud for Sean. Who's next?
I'll go receiving yards. Give me some receiving yard action. I'm going to go over for Nico Collins. Bad secondary. So give me the over for Nico. That would have been my first pick. I will take that. No hesitation. Feel very good about that.
I'm actually going to be so bold as to say on the Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think that you have a possibility of him still going over. I know that nobody wants to hear that, but also not them losing a game. I'm looking a lot at week one versus the Niners, where the Niners played them in a very particular way. Jaxon still got his, and yet Sam Darnold threw for 150. So I know nobody wants to hear it. I think that he might still have a game.
Okay, so more for Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I'm going to go to the pass touchdowns. C.J. Stroud's getting into the end zone through the air on this one. So I will put that in. That is our entry here.
You're going Green Goblin on that. That's going to minimize our payout a little bit.
I know it lowers the overall payout, but
all right.
Sam Darnold's not throwing for three touchdowns against this team, so I can't put that. And I'm playing it a little safe here, okay? I'm playing it a little safe. And if we get all four of these, we're going to win 72. So that's the entry right there. We'll get that put in for the folks here. And you can follow along. Again, Prize Picks, get the link in the description down below, code Texans, and you'll get play your first five. You get $50 headed into your account after that. So check it out in the link in the description down below. That's our entry for this week.
You did what everybody's been telling CJ to do, Cody, which is just take a profit. You know what I mean? Like that was a check down pick by you, the more than a half a touchdown pass.
Exactly.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'll make sure that we have this over on the community page for the Texans Collective page as well. So
cool.
We'll be able to see that.
Awesome. All right, boys. Well, let's jump back in here. We talked a little bit about the matchup earlier, but let's kind of dig into it a little more hardcore here. Blocking this Seattle defensive line. This to me is the matchup that's going to decide this game. Is the Texans offensive line is what we saw in the second half of that Titans game and throughout the Ravens game in its entirety. Is that something that is real? This is a massive, massive step. Like, it can't be overstated how big a step up in weight class this is for this offensive line from what they saw the last 2 weeks to what they're going to see this week. Is this something where I said today on Payne and Pendergast, this might have been the best. Like, we talk about the placement of the bye week, and I've heard people intimate, even D'Amico kind of intimated, hey, it's a little bit early for the bye week. He kind of alluded to that. He didn't really want to complain about it, I don't think. But given how poorly the Texans' weaknesses match up with the strengths of the Seahawks, especially offense for the Texans versus defense for the Seahawks, this might have been the perfect week to have the bye week, just to have extra time to rep this stuff.
I would agree. As far as what you're talking about, though, I think Byron Murphy's one more underrated interior D lineman in the league. And that for me is a little bit concerning. And I know it's not a natural, like, whenever, even with the way that the Texans handle the Titans, whenever Jeffrey Simmons is on the other side, you're like, oh damn, that guy's there. Vita Vea, even this year with Tampa Bay, like, they were scared to run a QB sneak or run it up the middle against him. I do think that, you know, Juice Scruggs, you're better than Laken Tomlinson. By the way, Seattle fans very disappointed that Laken Tomlinson doesn't start for the Texans. They found that out today. Byron Murphy is the kind of guy that is for Andrews, for Scruggs, for Ingram, who's getting a lot of love. Like, this is the type of guy that can completely wreck a game. So that's a little bit concerning for me, and I think he's just now on the surface of getting perhaps the respect that I think that he's destined to get as a really good interior guy.
4.5 sacks for him already this year, and Tavondre Sweat has been activated, right? Like, don't forget that other side of this. Yeah, no, those guys are going to be very much challenged, and I think that that's one of those things where we talk about a thing that can break down a quarterback's confidence, quarterback psyche, or just their game in general. Pressure up the middle, right? And CJ Stroud's done a great job getting the football out, but he hasn't dealt with people directly in his kitchen. Like, it's going to be very important that those pass protection schemes come together in a way that matters. And something that I've been asking myself before I'd gotten a chance to talk to a little bit some people that work up in Seattle is, how much is the noise factor still a thing? Like, we had done so much about going up to now Lumen Field, then I think CenturyLink Field is what I think about. And you see the broadcast with the little meter on the bottom showing the decibels, and it's like, oh, it's so loud, and the 12s and all of this. And I'm like, how much does that actually matter? And I'm still gathering that. I feel like teams are maybe adjusted themselves, steeling themselves and the resolve to that. But that's going to matter when it comes to making sure that everybody's on the same page on the offensive line quite a bit, right? Making sure that your checks are all in the right place. You can't afford to have missed assignments and things of that nature. And something small like that can be lost in not hearing what you're supposed to do. So I think that there's quite an interesting battle happening on this offensive line of seeing what the level of competence is. Because even in that game where we saw against the Ravens, there were things that you could go and pick at and go, well, that's bad. There's bad protection happening there. You just happen to get the ball out, or you happen to make something go right.
That's the thing, is this is the type of defensive line that fits perfectly for attacking what the Texans have struggled with when their offensive lines play bad. They don't blitz a lot. They just go out there. They're four guys that they put out there on the field, beat the snot out of your offensive line and your blocking scheme. And then they've got seven guys back there that make your quarterback's life a living hell. And they make it tough for him to get rid of the football, and they make it tough for him to find the empty parts of the defense and get rid of it. And they've got a bunch of different guys that they throw at you. You mentioned Byron Murphy. He's obviously the leader of that thing, but Leonard Williams in the middle, Maye on the outside. Like, I mean, they have multiple guys that on any given play can go out there and win, have success, and make life difficult for you. And that's the thing, is if they're going to give you opportunities to just have to block four guys and you're going to have five or six blockers in there, you have to go out there and just win. You have to, as a man, go out there as the offensive lineman and block the dude in front of you. Like, you've got to go out there and make that happen and give C.J. Stroud time for these guys, because they're not going to cover forever. This is a banged-up secondary, even if the good players do play. But if they're going to give you the opportunity to block four guys with five or sometimes six, you have to maximize, when you do get those guys blocked, the opportunities. So go out there and win your one-on-ones. I know it's easier said than done, because it's Juice Scruggs against Byron Murphy. It's Jake Andrews in the fifth game he's played in the NFL against Byron Murphy. But go out there and prove that you've put together something on this offensive line, and you are at least headed in the right direction.
Boy, Cody, but between that prize pick, that gutless pick that you made, and
gutless!
That analysis, you got to block your guy in front of you and complete passes. You're on a roll today, bro.
Wow.
Yeah, but how often, Landry? Hold on now. How often does a guy just not be able to block the motherfucker in front of him?
Yeah!
In the past 2 years? How many times have we watched Shaq Mason not know who to block, and the guy just goes back there and humps C.J. Stroud for 10 minutes? Okay, how often have we seen Juice Scruggs go out there in the previous couple years and just get his ass kicked right away? All right? So don't act like when I say something basic that they just, oh, yeah, they should automatically do it. Like, if they're going to rush four guys, go out there and win your one-on-one.
This is my point. Like, sitting here expecting these guys to go block guys one-on-one, I don't care what's happened the last 2 weeks. I think that's setting them up for failure. What needs to happen is Nick Caley needs to adjust. Nick Caley needs to be able to get the ball out of CJ's hands quickly, keep them on their toes, and figure something out. Because I don't think this offensive line, if they've gathered what's happened the last 2 weeks without acknowledging what they've gone against and everything, and they think that they're just going to have Juice Scruggs or Andrews or even Ed Ingram, Mr. PFF, go out there and block Byron Murphy one-on-one, or they're going to leave Ursary on an island with DeMarcus Lawrence, it's not going to go well. This is a Nick Caley game too. So, like, I don't think it's as simple as block the man in front of you. I don't think they're to that point yet. So if that's what you're expecting, then let's just go ahead and do next Tuesday's show, and we can talk about a loss.
But that's not what I'm intimating that they need to do. I'm going to say that there's moments in this game where you do have to do that. You've got five guys. They're sending four. Not everybody can get help. You can only double team one guy. Someone's going to have to win one-on-ones. You're not going to be able to help Ursary a bunch. He's got to go out there and show future franchise left tackle potential. You have to go out there and win out on an island if you're going to be a good left tackle.
I would like to come in and sit squarely in the middle. I do think that there's something to be said that for them only sending four. They're also, do you know which four? Like, they're really good. McDonald is really good at sending sim pressures, right? They're seven at the line. Which four are coming? I think that this is not just kind of a Nick Caley game. This is hugely a Nick Caley game. How smart is this offensive line? Right. Like, because, again, we know the level of brawn they have, and it's not like it's the most in the league. Are you guys going to be able, and Cole Popovich, hey, buddy, we're talking about you as well. How acclimated and how aware are you coming off of a bye week where your game plan should be as Teflon as it can be? How aware are you and alert are you to the tendencies that this team is going to bring to you in order to pick up something that, again, historically with this team in the recent history, y'all haven't done well against?
This is how I know. Landry intimated about the Tuesday show after this game. Coming up on Monday, if we could get in a time machine and just freeze the four of us in next Tuesday's show and take a look at the little rundown right there, if there's names of offensive linemen on other teams, like if Joel Batonio's name is in the grid to the left, then we know that the game went really shitty on Monday night. Like if we're going, okay, I mean, it was cool that Juice Scruggs was able to get his 52 PFF score against the Ravens or whatever the hell it was. And 52 is not good, but he was the worst of the five. But they need to if Monday's games, we're going to be talking about the trade deadline coming up regardless, because this is obviously not a perfect team. We should talk about it here because there's rumors of buzzing about running backs and things like that. And I think I'm guessing the audience is very curious about what we think about that. But if there's offensive linemen's names getting floated around there on Monday night or Tuesday morning, that'll be the tell that like things, they couldn't step up in weight class, man. They still belong in featherweight with the skeleton Ravens crew and the Titans. So speaking of which, I guess it was Dan Graziano today in his Buzz column that said that there is buzz around the Texans and all that. I haven't had a chance to read the column yet, but every tweet that I saw alluding to it had Breece Hall's picture in it. So you guys tell me, how specific did Graziano get, and what are your feelings on going and getting running? Landry, I know you're all about you have thought for a long time the Texans have needed to upgrade the running back room.
I think it's the board game combo trade that I think everyone should value when they make a trade. Chess and checkers. I think it helps you in the short term. I think it helps you in the long term. So I think it makes a lot of sense. That's what they need. They need a lot of multiple running backs that can make plays in games, and it just makes too much sense. People ask, what's the cost going to be? I don't think it's going to be a second even. You have extra draft equity that you can use, and the reality is they know that you still have to sign him. He's not under contract. He wants no part of being a Jet. We know that. Everyone knows that. So I think the Breece Hall thing is what would really make sense. I think he can help you. He'd be your best back. I think that then Marks can be a compliment, and then Chubb can do whatever's going on. But I think the Breece Hall trade makes too much sense, and I think that it's something that they should consider. And I also subscribe to the notion that they wanted him a few years ago, and the Jets traded up and grabbed him. And by the way, they don't have enough Iowa State guys on offense, so they need.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What are we trying to do? Like, are you angling for Matt Campbell at this point? If you collect enough of them, can you find a way to get them? No, I mean, you laid it out. I don't even know much more I can add outside of the only thing that makes me stop and go, is what does that do? Are you putting someone in the path of development for Woody Marks, who, as you mentioned, like young running back that you're looking forward to? However, also young running back, Breece Hall, right? Like, I think you're still right there. So, yeah, I like the idea, because what happens if you get a knock? What happens if someone gets hurt? Like, you're already kind of tandeming this out with two guys that are working pretty well together. But outside of that, are you returning to the Damian Pierce show? Because I think I'm done with that one in particular. Are you returning to Dare Ogunbowale getting actual factual touches in the backfield? Because I think a lot of people in this fan base are done with that. Are you actually going to give someone like J.J. Taylor or Juwan Jordan, or which the two is still here? I don't remember. They're the same. Juwan Jordan. There we go. Yeah. They've morphed in the same person in my brain, and I apologize. That's on me.
Wow.
That's on me. But are you going to actually give them a shot? Because that's the thing. Is like they are the same person in that I keep seeing them both on the practice squad, right? Like that's the way that my brain has worked. Because are you going to give them a shot? Like, and if all those answers end up where I think they end up, you probably need to add another running back.
If you're trying to get a running back, you are dipping into a position group that is highly sought after across the league. Graziano mentioned among the many teams, the Texans, the Chiefs, the Chargers. It was also intimated that the Patriots are looking for running back help. The Steelers could look for running back help. If the Vikings injuries linger, maybe they're in on run. Like, there's so many teams that like it's easier to go and see how a running back changes. Now you got extra draft capital, so you could make that trade more attractive if you feel like you need the guy and you want the guy, and you get an early crack at seeing if you want to sign him back. Hey, it works out great. As much as I care about the development of Woody Marks, I care about the 2025 football season. And if you had Breece Hall on this team, you're a much better football team with Breece Hall and Woody Marks and however you need to use Nick Chubb versus the Chubb and Woody combo that they currently have. So I'm all in favor of Breece Hall. And if you're going to shop at that position, shop at the top. Okay, shop at the top. Don't get Jerome Ford. Okay, go get Breece Hall when he's available at that position, and go change the outlook of that running back room.
And the other thing about it is they've shown that if they like somebody, they're willing to give up a draft pick so that guy doesn't hit the market. I think there's a good chance that after this season, they're in the Breece Hall sweepstakes. But they showed it with Mixon 2 years ago. They showed it with Kirk. It's going to be a little bit higher draft equity. But they've shown if they like somebody, they don't even want to F with it. They don't want to play the aging games. They get you in the building, and then you figure something out. I would still draft the back next year because I think Woody Marks is fine. But I think part of the reason why people are pushing for Woody Marks to be the guy is because he's so much better than Nick Chubb right now. I think in a perfect world, Woody Marks is the number two running back, and he's a perfect complement. For me, the vision I have for Woody Marks is eventually he's your second best back, and he's catching at least five balls a game. Like, you're using his super skill, and you're maximizing it. And when he's called upon to make plays, he's going to be able to do it. But that's what I would do. And I would still draft the back next year. But I think the Breece Hall thing makes sense because I think there's a chance. I don't think any of us are betting on Joe Mixon being back. I think there's a chance next year that Breece Hall is a possibility even next year. Well, why not let him help your team this year, and why not get something going and give him an opportunity to come here and be that guy? And then all of a sudden, maybe you run the ball better. Because contrary to popular belief, a running back can make the offensive line look better. We saw it last year. Like, we saw it last year with Joe Mixon. Like, you can make the offensive line look better running the ball. I just think this makes too much sense. And then you look at the other two teams that are mentioned, it's Kansas City and the Chargers. So, okay, well, that would kind of suck if he goes there and he ends up doing what it seems like he's capable of if he gets out of New York. I'm a big Breece Hall guy. Sign me up for it.
Yeah, and I don't even think this is at, like, the radical end of a potential Nick Caserio move. I mean, Nick has shown he'll make moves. You know, like, he will make trades. He'll do contract extensions. Like, I don't think there's anything, you know, that's – the last 2 years, I mean, there have been a lot of, like, wow, the Texans, the C.J. Gardner-Johnson trade, I think, was a miniature – or the Stephon Diggs trade was a huge one like that when that deal got made. Like, I think Nick entertains everything. I think if he were to give up more draft capital than he would want to, there could be a contract extension coming for Breece Hall simultaneously with the – like, I don't think anything's off the table when it comes to improving this, because they obviously feel the same way you do, Cody. Like, yeah, they're about the 2025. I mean, they think in future windows, obviously, but they're all about trying to get this team better. I think it would send a great message to C.J. Stroud, too, if they're going out and getting a running back at that level as well.
Yeah, you got an extra deuce. You got the Giants third, and you got an extra fourth. Like, I mean, there's
– Don't trade the two, though. Don't trade the two. Even for not like running backs, don't trade the two.
I have a very radical idea and I'll probably get made fun of for this, but they're a dysfunctional organization. Why not call and see what the deal is? I would call the Dolphins about Achane.
Oh, yeah.
I'd call the Dolphins about Achane, and I'd be willing to offer one of the twos.
Yes. I mean, that's a difference maker. I mean,
my fear is that one of the good teams is going to go get Achane, and the Dolphins, if they get into sell mode here in the next couple of weeks, I'd call them. I'd try to pry away one of the only pieces of that franchise that's worth a crap right now. Yeah. And I'd be willing to use one of the twos to go and get him. And even if you need a two and some of that other, you know, back into the draft shenanery or whatever, make it happen. Okay. If he's available, I check in on him. Again, if you're shopping, shop at the top. Yeah. No bargain basements. You're already trying to skate by with the bargain basement moves on the offensive line. Shop at the top if you're going to go get a running back.
All right, let's hit some of the comments here in the chat before we do some final thoughts on the game between the Texans and the Seahawks on Monday here on Texans Collective. Johnny Lambeau, I need the Colts to quit playing patty cake games versus terrible teams and fall back down to earth, please. Where are we on the Colts right now, 6 weeks in?
I think they're a problem. I think they're a problem. And I know that they just beat Jacoby Brissett, and I know that it's a backup quarterback, but they know how to win games multiple ways. They can score a lot of points. They're also a pretty opportunistic defense. They give up a lot of yards, but they're top five, I think, in yards allowed per game. I'm not going to minimize 5-1. And I also think, and thanks a lot, Chicago, the fact that they got Tyler Warren, you can make a case that the Colts right now, and I know that Bijan Robinson probably has something to say about it, but you can at least make a case that they have the best running back and best tight end in the league, which is as much – it always comes down to Daniel Jones. That's kind of two of the quarterback's best friends is a tight end and a good running back. So I actually think the Colts are a good team, and I think they have a really good coach. I mention this all the time. I mean, they were a drop pass away from winning with Gardner Minshew. So I think the Colts are good. I get what's going on with minimizing the schedule. Texans haven't beat a team worth a shit either. So, I mean, let's just be completely honest about it.
I think it has to be a minimum. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't believe in them. I really don't. I don't believe they can beat good football teams. I don't believe this Daniel Jones thing is going to keep up. But they have clearly built in a little bit of a buffer, and they have, as the Texans' margin for error has, you know, become smaller, they have created an enormous margin for error by taking care of their business and getting a little lucky against the Denver Broncos early in the season. But I do not believe this is a team that is a championship caliber team or a very good team. Can they win the AFC South? Absolutely, because they've created a little bit of a lead and advantage that will be difficult to overcome. But I don't believe this is a good football team.
I think it's a good football team. I won't go anywhere near a great football team or a team that's really going to make a lot of noise when we talk about postseason. But one thing about Daniel Jones that we've seen in his career, as funny as it may be, you put him next to a good running game and he can be serviceable. And he looks like he hasn't been doing anything like incredible. He's just kind of been executing an offense, which, as you mentioned, Landry, we've seen quarterbacks do that with lesser talent under Shane Steichen. Like, so I do think that this is a recipe that you can keep riding. I do also think you don't have to minimize the early part of the schedule to acknowledge that there are some haymakers for them boys waiting around the corner, boys.
Oh, so yeah.
I do think that is the interesting part of it for me, because I'm looking at it and I'm seeing the Falcons on here that look a lot better, although they are the Atlanta Falcons, and I keep falling for that one. The Steelers, or whatever you want to do with the Steelers. The Chiefs obviously look good now. Are the Jags still going to be solid at that time of the season? Because they get them twice, the Seahawks, the Niners, like, depending on if they get healthier, right? Like, there's some things that could be some real problems for them as they get further down in the schedule.
And I think it's also like, this is how I'll put it. Like, I think any given Sunday, the Texans can beat the Colts. I'm not sitting here saying that, like, it's, I don't put them like on the same pedestal as we do like the top teams, but I'm thinking more about the division. And for me, like, the biggest comparison I give about the feeling that I have about the Colts is the same feeling that I had about the Vikings last year. Like, they kind of, like, they're good. Like, they got some really, really good things, but nobody in their right mind is going to pick them to win the Super Bowl or multiple playoff games. But when I talk about the Colts, I'm more so talking about the division. And hell, if they get home field advantage, like, maybe they can't, things can get a little bit crazy. But that's what I'm talking about as far as legit. Is I think they are like Minnesota got in last year. It came down to the final week of the season to win the division. That's kind of how I look at them.
The only thing I would say about that, Landry, like last year there were legitimately stout teams at the top of the football pecking order. You know, like Detroit was 15-2. And they were doing it with injuries. Like, they were really good. I mean, the AFC was, we know firsthand, it was crazy at the top. Josh Allen winning the MVP. Lamar Jackson's injury changes a whole lot of things, as does Joe Burrow's injury in the AFC. And Buffalo looks beaten up right now. The four teams they've beaten are combined 3-21. Like, and it's week 7. So there's 100 things that are going to change between now and the end of the year. But just looking at the landscape right now, like, it almost feels like this is one of those seasons where it's set up for some janky-ass weird team like the Colts to make it through the AFC with how parity-ridden the whole conference is right now.
I mean, there exists a pretty solid possibility that the Colts are a top two seed in the AFC with the lead that they've built in and some of the
mathematically,
and some of the softer parts of their schedule. And if they somehow snuck past the Kansas City Chiefs in late November, you know, that could be a tiebreaker that decides, you know, exactly where they are in the AFC pecking order as well. So I just not super impressed yet. I obviously see the tendrils of what could be a really good team, but I'm not betting on Daniel Jones being a quarterback that you have to be worried about over the course of a whole year.
Well, this is where it kind of comes all back around to the importance of this game that we'll get to before we get out of here. But like the Texans, yeah, they're 2-3. The problem is there's two teams that are ahead of them, and they're not chasing one team. They're chasing two teams right now. So when we look at the back end of that Colts schedule, we're like, well, after the bye, they've got 7 games left, and they're all really hard games. They got 2 against the Texans. They got 2 against the Jags. And it's like, hold on. Like, the 2 against the Jags, we're like, oh, let's go Jags. It's like, yeah, okay, well, that's 2 wins the Jags could potentially. Like, that they play each other is, you know, that's – we'll have to see by the time – the buy for the Colts rolls. I think their buy is in like week 12 or something like that. It's a late buy. But, you know, just what does the math look like for that? The schedule has been undeniably easy, not only from an opponent's perspective. They played four of their first six at home, so at least they got to travel more here in the last two-thirds of the season. All right, so final thoughts, guys, before we get out of here on the Seahawks and the Texans, Monday night, 9 o'clock kickoff that you can hear. You can hear the game on Sports Radio 610. Obviously, watch it on Monday Night Football on ESPN. Would this be the biggest regular season win of the D'Amico Ryans era, 2 years and seven games in, whatever it is, six games in?
See, I had this same thought, Sean. I don't think you can put it above week 18 Indianapolis in 2023. Like, so we'll just throw that one aside because that was obviously a win or get in. Yeah. But I think it's up there. Like, if I was comparing it, I would compare it to kind of the Cincinnati game where you went on the road, you beat Cincinnati. Burrow played and he ended up getting hurt, but he was on the team and they were an AFC championship team at the time. And that, I think that was the moment where I know that they won a couple of wacky games before that, but they'd also shown that they could that they could lose some games that they shouldn't. But I thought that was the game where you said, okay, this is a legit football team. The switch is flipped. So I feel like this can be the same type of game in Seattle. So I think it's right up there. The difference between 3-3 and 2-4 with everything that we just talked about with the Colts, it's insane. And then you look at how it's laid out for you, where you have three straight games at noon, which is ideal for a coach and a football team. I think it is. I think it is. If we throw the week 18, 2023, I would say that yes, it is, because it can change a hell of a lot. And let's be honest, the expectations this year compared to the previous 2023, like, I don't think anyone would have been like upset if upset, yes, but not, you wouldn't have held it too much against them if they had lost the final game of the season to get in the playoffs based on what expectations were. So to answer your question, it's damn close.
Yeah.
Yes, asterisk, if they have an offense. Like, I think that's going to be the thing that tells me a whole bunch, right? This could be a turning point, because if they have an offense and you come out of Seattle like, okay, the recipe is there, defense with an offense that, you know, can do enough. And then you also can look at the early portions of the season and you can try and wipe that away by saying that this was the infancy of them doing this. Like, you can recontextualize a lot of the season. If not, then all the hell, all the fire and brimstone that we have for them on the way that they handled their offensive line, bringing in a first-time offensive play caller, all of those things, I think very much are right back into play. And that is a huge conversation to be had about the arc of the D'Amico Ryans era starting out. You really would have hurt, and this is a word that you know I hate, so please understand, I say this with real respect, you would have hurt the momentum of what you've been doing and what you've been building here, right? So I think that, yes, this could be a huge win, but you got to make sure you show me that you got an offense.
This is, to me, one of the biggest proven opportunities that this team has had under D'Amico Ryans. Obviously, you know, you take care of business on the road against Cincinnati a couple of years ago, get into the playoffs on the road in Indianapolis. Like, those are huge, but we have still tremendous questions about this team and the direction they chose to go and how they operated, not only from how the general manager put this team together, but who they hired as the offensive coordinator, how he's operating. We have questions about the quarterback. All these opportunities are in front of you. Prove it. Can you block the Seahawks? Prove it. Is C.J. Stroud closer to Baltimore C.J. Stroud or the guy where we were wondering for the first 3 weeks, yeah, what's going on? Prove who you are. Is Nick Caley a good offensive coordinator? Prove it. Can Woody Marks get the job done when you trust him? Prove it. You know, like, there's so many prove it opportunities within the questions that we have about this team for 2025, as well as the grandiose long-term questions that we have about this team. Like, this game is a huge data point for 2025 and how this organization operates as well, when you think about all the questions that we still have about.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and I think, too, I mean, the team won't get ahead of themselves. They're focused on Seattle. But I just think Landry alluded to it. I mean, you look at the three games. You come home 3-3 with a schedule where you've got three games in a row at home, those friendly noon Sunday starts. And that's a stadium where when the crowd was jumping last year, you forced Josh Allen, Jared Goff, and Justin Herbert into their, by far, their worst games of the season. You could argue with Josh Allen, worst game of his career when it comes to just purely completion percentage. And he went on to win the MVP of the league. you got three games in a row after that. But I think at 3-3, I think a lot of people are going to be back in on the Texans if they win this game on Monday night. I don't even think the offense needs – I think they just win. You know, I would prefer, Reggie, as you alluded to, that the offense looked capable in doing so. But if they win 16-14 and they come home 3-3 after an 0-3 start, I think a lot of people are going to be very excited for those three games. And you're talking about Mac Jones or Brock Purdy, Bo Nix, and Trevor Lawrence, and then a Cam Ward road game after that. You get to 3-3, and you are setting yourself up for a major, major opportunity to go on a nice little run here. Then Buffalo comes to town for that Thursday night game, and you know, and then it's on to the Colts after that. So I'm getting way ahead of myself now. But just those three games at home coming up after this, going into those 3-3 versus going into those limping in at 2-4 is such a major, major difference for this team.
No, I absolutely you're 100% right. Like, I cannot deny that that 3-3 would hit like crack. But at the same time, how many days would that be? 15 days for a game plan against a team that admittedly has a really stout defensive line, but the secondary does not scare me, right? Like, I think that there's something to be said for this. Should be, I'm not saying this is like a Herculean task in front of you. It's not necessarily a walk in the park, but I need to see that you can put something on the table here with these kind of circumstances. Because if you can't, what do I have to look forward to when it's 6 or 7 days that you've got coming up in the near future against teams that are also going to be problems?
Yeah. All right. We'll see what happens. You guys got any feel? Are you making your predictions later this week? Are you analyzing it a little bit more? I don't want to step on the toes of any SNL or Houston football or locker room stuff.
I think the superpower comes through. I really do. I believe this defense can overcome the offense. That's really what it's going to have to be. Like, Nick Caley, you're being graded on a 30-point curve, brother. Like, as much as we talk about this, there's the 30-point curve. So you can get a 40 and pass. Like, so just go out there and get a 40. Don't get a 20. Go out there and do your thing. And that's really it. It's the superpower. It's the ballers that we previously mentioned. It's set up for you to be able to do your thing. And then I think the sky's the limit. So I actually think they win this game. Because I think their superpower is good enough to be able to, and their superpowers are good enough to be able to take them home.
I'm leaning Texans. I mean, I don't know that the injury report or anything like that's going to drastically change this. I just don't believe in Seattle's offense. I really don't. I believe in Jackson Smith and Jigba. I don't believe on the other, 25 or some odd guys that are on that offense that they have. So
I'm right with you guys. I really am in a place where I have to see it with this offensive line in particular, and how all of the other things fold in around it. You know, like, that's something that I still want to see in the adverse circumstance of being at Lumen Field and with how good that defensive line has been. But I am leaning that way, though. You guys are right. Defense is great. Seattle's offense, I don't think, is terrifying, even though they have deep threats. I think that you can mitigate that like the Niners did. I still want to see it.
Yeah, I think the spread right now is Seattle 3, somewhere around there. Is it 3, 3.5, something like that? It feels about right to me.
I'd say 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably taking the Seahawks by a field goal in this one and hoping like hell that I'm wrong. And I'm a little – the thing that scares me, I'm not a huge believer in Sam Darnold. You guys know I think he has the fattest face of any quarterback in the NFL. And that you were alluding to his facial expression actually changing at times, Cody, earlier. I'm like, no, he looks like that all the time with that blank deer in a headlight stare. But I think I do think Seattle does some things offensively that the Texans, they've not, even since D'Amico got here, they've not been great against teams that have got a lot of play action and get you taking advantage of your over-aggressiveness. I think it's going to be a close game. I would take Seattle by a field goal and just hope that you guys are all three right and I'm wrong, and you guys can make fun of me next Tuesday night when we do this again. So, gentlemen, enjoyed it as always. It was fun.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah. That's Landry Locker. The locker room, as you can see, with the neon moon in the background right there. The locker room with Landry Locker, Reggie Atatula, In the Loop, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Does a great job on middays on our station, Sports Radio 610. Cody Stutes, Houston Football with Cody Stutes. And you can catch Cody and Landry on SNL throughout the week as well. And we'll be back on Tuesday night next week. Hey, quick reminder on a couple of things. Download Prize Picks, as you can still see down there right below. Download Prize Picks and play alongside us. Yep, right there. Get $5 or sorry, play a $5 lineup and you get $50 in lineups instantly, guaranteed. You don't need to win the $5 lineup. You get the $50 into your account automatically. You got to use the code Texans to do that. Give us a like, give us a subscribe as well. Tell a friend about it. We're typically most of the time on Monday nights, but when the schedule, either bye week or primetime games on Mondays come up, we shuffle things around a little bit, but we'll be back at it Tuesday night next week, and then a nice consistent schedule for a few weeks of doing this again on Monday night. So thank you to everybody who communicated via the chat. We appreciate that. All of you for listening, and we'll see you guys on Tuesday night.